Cool. I want to start with a quick opinion, and that is that the life of a marketer is not getting easier despite all the amazing, you know, innovations out there to help us. And really, I think it's about the fact that we're living in an age right now where people's attention spans are getting shorter, people have less time. But the weird kind of paradox to this is the fact that people still seem to be binging show upon show on Netflix, right? So what gives with that? You know, what is the secret sauce to getting your audience to, you know, not only pay attention to you, but to actually actively seek you out? And in case you hadn't picked it up from my slide title there, I believe it's all about making your content actually mean something to the people that you're trying to reach. So in this closing keynote, we're going to work through three key components here. We're going to be talking about how to discover what your audience cares about, how to generate content generously, and how to build a media company within your marketing department to get that content out there. So hi, everyone. I'm Tom Harding. I'm the co-founder of MishGuru, and I get the privilege of wrapping up this conference today, something that I'm incredibly excited about. Because I get to speak to you all about a topic that I believe is absolutely the future of storytelling. So like I said, I'm the co-founder and CEO of a company called MishGuru. We're based here in New York. I know right now I'm the only thing standing between you all and your Friday evening, so in the interest of time, I'm not going to attempt to explain what the name means. And overall, I'll try to keep this pretty quick for everyone. Before I dive in, though, I did want to share a little of my own story, and as well, really, just to qualify for you, you know, the context for what I'm talking about today and where I'm coming from. As well, I want to unpack that issue I talked about up front a little more for you as well. So over the past 4.5 years at Mish, the team and I have been helping some really incredible brands all around the world to tell smarter stories and more powerful stories on Instagram and Snapchat. We get to help amazing brands like McDonald's, Spotify, Coca-Cola, and a couple here even in the audience. Shout out, I think we've got Georgetown, NYU, Thinks, a couple more, I think Princeton and Redlands as well, so cool to have you along. And we started out down in New Zealand, hence my funny accent, and now we've got teams spanning across North America, Europe, and Asia Pacific as well. The stories that our software has helped brands tell has resulted in some pretty awesome results. So things like Cannes Lions Awards, 200% follower growth on accounts in under, you know, just a couple of months, engagement spikes of 65%, and we've even helped McDonald's drive a 35% increase in the number of applications they had for their job listings, and we'll dive into that in a little bit as well. So as I mentioned earlier, I think marketers have it pretty tough right now. And more specifically, I think there's one really big issue that we're all staring at. So before 1990, there were 8 channels that we could communicate through. And now suddenly there's hundreds. There's literally hundreds of channels. And it doesn't seem to be shrinking at all. What that means is we suddenly have this incredibly fragmented media use from the audience that we're trying to reach. And we know for stories specifically, as it's increased in popularity, the space has just got incredibly crowded. In fact, stories has grown at 842% for the last 2 years alone. So why is this a problem? Well, because as marketers, we're all competing for one thing, right? We're looking for attention. And with the increase in channels, the volume of content, the amount of people, and the number of brands all trying to play around in these channels, it's making it harder than ever for us to get that piece of attention. With a quick Google, I think we can all see, you know, there's a ton of people out here right now trying to help marketers in our fight for that attention. But there's that one catch that I think we're all missing right now. So there's Netflix binging, there's Hulu binging, there's Prime binging. Season upon season of shows have been consumed right now. Recently, Netflix let out a few of their stats, and it revealed that they're doing 140 million hours of content stream per day, which adds up to over a billion views per week. And here we all are competing for our couple seconds, right? It's crazy. So, you know, I think the reality is people do have time. They're just being increasingly selective in where they're choosing to spend it. And I think that's because as an audience, they're always going to be out there seeking the stories that actually mean something to them rather than just what's being put in front of them. And although, you know, I think it is a huge part of it, it is more than just entertainment these days that people are looking from, particularly from, you know, us as a brand. But despite the gloomy outlook I've set up for you all there, you know, I think there really are still stories that are cutting through for everyone. So our jobs as marketers, it's no longer about, you know, interrupting people or trying to put something necessarily in front of our audience just to grab that small bit of attention. It's about creating shareable moments that actually resonate with people. And there absolutely are still stories that are cutting through right now. And I think for all of us here, you know, it's time for us to flip the switch on how we tell those stories for our brands. We just need to look at Heineken's World Apart campaign, Nike's latest play, or the Ice Bucket Challenge. And we can see it's actually, you know, it's a really exciting time for us to be working in social media. Because for the stories that are getting through, that are getting the traction and getting the shareability, you know, these are the stories that right now mean something for people. And I want to back up for a second here and share a really powerful example that I came across recently. I know for a lot of the initial ones I talked about there, they're all really big brands, right? Maybe a little bit hard for some of us to relate to. But I think the ideas and practices here are still, you know, super relevant for all of us. Whether you sell earplugs or textbooks, or in my case, content marketing software, I wanted to show this example here, and I know there's a few higher education marketers in the room, so this one should be particularly relevant for all of you. But it's a story, and it's a really remarkable example from one of our clients on how to create content, you know, that actually meant something to their audience. So this one was a recruitment campaign for Western Sydney, Australia University. It's had, I think, just under 3 million views now. So we'll jump in and we'll take a quick look at it. So I think that's probably about the 10th time I've watched that, and it still gives me goosebumps. It's a really, really incredible piece, and I think one of the things for this video in particular, aside from, you know, those 3 million views that I talked about, is actually when we dive into the comment section on the YouTube video. So I know for most of us, when we think about comment section on YouTube, it's, you know, generally a pretty negative, dark place filled with all kinds of bad things. But I wanted to just show you a couple from this and you know, jump in and have a look at this video online. There's just a whole stream of it. But what's really incredible here is that, you know, people are not only passionate about the story itself, they're passionate about the university that made it as well, which, you know, for Western Sydney is just an incredible result. And I think really for this one, it was about how it made the people who watch it feel and what we started to see, and you can't see it in the slide here, but behind it, People are actually starting to share their own experiences and starting to talk about, you know, how this actually impacted them personally. They're all sort of in there relating to it on a human level, and why this piece was significant to them, which, you know, I just thought was pretty incredible. And I think as a storyteller, it's a dead giveaway that, you know, you've struck something gold. I think when you manage something like that. So I think for us, it's you know, the idea of impacting people with our stories. What we're really trying to do is find that thing that resonates with them. And you know, what does that mean exactly to resonate with people? Well, I'll just jump in really quickly, and we'll have a look at the definition here. So, resonating is something that becomes important to someone or that they can relate to because of a similar experience or belief. Therefore, if we want to resonate, our content or the stories that we tell, they have to be important to our audiences and be about things that they can practically relate to, you know, because of a similar experience or belief, which is great. It's really good stuff, but how do we actually, you know, how do we do that? So diving into this, I want to start here by discovering what it is that our audiences really care about. After all, you know, we're making this content for them. So just to be clear, you know, on social media, every single tweet, every story, every video, every comment, it's an invitation for us as marketers to engage. Our jobs are to start these conversations, and the content we produce is, you know, really one of the first pieces to that puzzle. But like with any good conversation, it does have to start with some really thoughtful listening, because there's really no way that we can actually understand our audiences unless we, you know, we listen and we listen carefully. It's only through understanding them that, you know, we really, really can create that content that's going to mean something to them. And I think, to be clear, it's not going to mean something to everybody. And I know it pains me sometimes when we're doing our marketing, because, you know, we all want to make something that broadly appeals. But the reality is we have to be specific, and we have to be really, really clear on, you know, who are these people that we're trying to reach and what is it that's going to resonate with those people. And that's why in social media and storytelling, data is king, because data itself can tell us a really, really rich story, you know, about our audience. And when we pay more attention to our audience than whatever else is happening, you know, out there in the industry at any given time, that's, I think, when people start paying attention back to us. And the data's there, right? And it can tell you a very compelling story about your audience. The right data should tell you, you know, what your audience cares about, and it can be qualitative or quantitative. You know, ideally, it's both of these things. But what we're looking for at the end of all of this, and I wouldn't try dive in too much on there; that'll probably give you a headache. But what we're trying to understand by the end of this is, you know, what is the kind of content our audience engages with? What are the topics they find important? How does our brand sentiment track over time? What does our audience believe in? What are their priorities? How do they spend their time, and on what channels, and what's really going to shift the needle for us? You know, this isn't the data around household income or age, you know, that kind of demographic stuff, which, you know, likely you probably knew something about it going into it. You know, and again, that does have its part to play. But what I'm talking about is that psychographic behavioral stuff that's going to really let us tap into what's resonating for that audience. And honestly, that data is everywhere. Even, you know, if you can't afford some of those really big, expensive social listening tools or pieces of audience research, you know, there is data out there, you know, if you're hungry to seek it out. If you take the time to understand your social media analytics, you know, you are going to understand your audience. And I'm sure, speaking to a room full of social media marketers, I'm preaching to the choir a bit with that one. So here's an example of where this has gone wrong. Without thoughtful audience insights and listening, you know, the stories that we tell actually have a really big risk of coming across as tone deaf. So hopefully we can all kind of remember back to this one, or maybe not, hopefully. But this was a campaign from Pepsi, who, in this example, they did know what their audience cared about. But where they fell down here was in the execution of the campaign itself, because what they didn't understand was the nuances of the movement and how, you know, them as a brand could actually authentically be a part of that. And I just want to say, if you're in doubt, then ask. You know, don't be afraid to actually seek audiences from your insights. Social media is going to give you a steer on what kind of content they engage with and how strongly they feel about it. But at the end of the day, you know, we should be doing our research into those specific audience groups. And really what we're looking for is to understand, you know, again, what are those beliefs and priorities. If you have to, you know, conduct formal research into it, informal research, but get out there and start asking some of those probing questions. Because I think sometimes, you know, those kind of conversations that we have with people along the way really do give us the best idea of what matters. This is kind of on the other end of the spectrum here, right? And I think this sort of play from Nike, you know, it's been talked about a lot, so I'm not looking to go too deeply into it. But what I did want to say about this one, you know, from a storytelling perspective, is that this is and was absolutely a balanced and insight-led move by Nike. So, you know, yeah, there were people out there burning their pairs of shoes on YouTube, but for Nike, that wasn't the audience that they were trying to reach. They knew for them and the insight that they had that 2/3 of the people who they're trying to sell to in the US here are under 35, and 45% of that group is under 25. So their passionate customer is the millennial. And for the millennial group, the research tells us this. In addition to expecting brands to prove their worth through actions, millennials align themselves with brands that reflect their values. So brands that are chosen for how well they serve the beliefs and ideals of an individual rather than as a way to project status. And Nike knew this from their audience data, what their audience believed in. And they didn't care about marginalizing the middle-class dudes in the Midwest who, you know, were only buying one pair of shoes a year, right? They wanted the young urban setters who are forward-thinking culturally and, you know, those really socially conscious people. They understood very clearly what the political views were of that group of people. And, you know, with this story, I think really their main competitor wasn't an Adidas, it wasn't a Puma or Under Armour. It really was every person who's told their audience that they can't do something, that, you know, their dreams were too big, that they were stretching, you know, beyond their reach. So, you know, I think, yes, it's important to stand for a cause, but in the Pepsi example, you know, they didn't really take a stance. Their only stance in that situation was that people should drink Pepsi versus Nike in this example. One I wanted to share as well, another example here, on just a slightly smaller scale so we can all, you know, get a bit more of a feel for it. This one was really powerful for me. It was about a guy named Mike Brown. So Mike started a coffee shop up in Saratoga Springs, quit his day job as an accountant. And initially for Mike, things weren't going too well. And he couldn't really understand it. He was out there talking to the experts and trying to work out, you know, what was it about his coffee that wasn't taking off. And what they all came back and said to him was, Mike, you're using the wrong coffee beans. You know, he's using these beans called Robusta beans. Gives a really strong coffee taste and commonly associated with instant coffee. But really, really high caffeine content. And for Mike personally, he loved them. And as he kept struggling along, there's sort of something that Mike noticed along the way from his core customer group. They kept asking him the same question. They're like, Mike, what is the strongest cup of coffee that you can give me, and give me one of those? And what he realized after a while was that his customers were blue collar workers. They were truck drivers that were working long hours and had to stay alert. So Mike actually started tinkering with his blend and his roast. And eventually he decided he wanted to tell a different story about his coffee. He made the world's strongest coffee. And this was, again, for a very specific set of people. He didn't want to make this thing for everyone in the world. It was for a very specific set. And they turned out to be very passionate people who came back time and time again. He got to use his Robusta coffee beans. And what he found was that his story resonated with that core audience in a really big way. So they've now got hundreds of thousands of social media followers, and they regularly share relatable content that the audience loves about the importance of a strong coffee hit, and they get some incredible engagement on that. to the point where people are so passionate about this brand that they've actually got tattoos of the logo on themselves. Tattoos on their bodies for a coffee brand. Who would do that? And I can confirm this is not me. but back to it. So yeah, really just to highlight there, we do need to start with those audience insights and finding out which of those stories are going to resonate with our crowd. All right, so if we assume now that we know pretty intimately what our audience cares about, let's jump into generating content generously for them. So as we get into a more crowded market, we get pressured to do more. I'm sure a lot of you here are experiencing that right now. We want more market share, more media activity, and more content produced. But in my opinion, more results in three things. It results in a culture of average products, average messages, and average creative. It creates one-way and surface-level interactions, and it starts to lack meaning after a while. And I think really, you know, by doing more, we're actually creating to serve ourselves rather than our audience. So, you know, we're doing this to hit our goals, the targets our bosses have maybe set for us, the growth projections, all of that stuff. It's no longer being done for ourselves, right? And the problem here is that people actually don't care about your growth targets. They don't care at all. What they do care about is stuff that means something to them, stuff they can relate to, and that they're actually better off after having experience. So when I say creating generously, this is exactly what I mean. And I think, you know, we should make no mistake here that as storytellers, all of us in the room here, as content creators and social media marketers, you know, we're creating art. And if we take the definition from Seth Godin, every person in this room is responsible for creating art. And for our art to mean something, it needs to be created generously for your audience, about your audience, and ideally even with your audience. I think this is an incredible example. The Queer Eye's revamped series on Netflix. And you know, typically when people hear the expression series reboot, you kind of hear a collective groan. And by all accounts, I think this one, you know, absolutely should have been. You know, it was a series reboot on a show that had this incredibly predictive story arc that was the same, you know, time and time again. But something incredible happened with this reboot, and it's that they paid attention to their audience and they actually created for them. And I think in the climate that we're in right now, culturally, you know, there is a really big fight on our hands to achieve and maintain equality. You know, to have mutual understanding and human connection. You know, we're right now, there's a lot of outside forces that are sort of tearing us apart. You know, we've got a whole heap of things going on in the backdrop here, I think, when this show, you know, came back to life. And this show really is about people who wouldn't normally come together showing up and mutually understanding and learning from each other. So they're breaking down stereotypes and barriers. And, you know, this is a show that people are a little bit better off after consuming and experiencing. And it came at a perfect time, right? And that wasn't luck from the creators of the show. You know, these were important stories to tell, and they were told just at the right time when the audience needed it. So really, really cool piece of work that I think, you know, has gone out and sort of touched the hearts and minds of a lot of people out there. And it was sort of created, you know, based on the knowledge of what's culturally relevant and important in the exact moment. And I think if we, you know, look at millennial research right now, it tells us that when it comes to brands and social media, that millennials, unsurprisingly, want to be at the center of the stories that, you know, we're telling and creating. They want us to create a narrative about them, you know, that they can actually be a part of, and it's one that gives them something that they can, you know, spread the word and go and tell on your behalf as well. They want to know, you know, what are you doing for them? They want you to, you know, but enter into generosity with your stories time and time again. So one thing about creating generously as well here is that it generally tends to mean that the story's not entirely about you. And in fact, it should generally be more about the audience. We were really lucky. We got to work with McDonald's on a pretty fantastic campaign that was all about their audience. And this one came at a time where McDonald's were looking to recruit fresh new candidates in the build-up to one of their busiest times in the holiday season. And through their data, they knew that recruits were typically aged between 16 and 24 high school or university students. And they knew that for Gen Z and millennials, that they wanted to be a part of their stories. And they also knew that in order to engage them and win them over, they had to put them at the center of it. So enter Snap Locations. It was an insight-led vertical video campaign that started with a custom Snapchat lens, which put the user in the McDonald's uniform, then actually asked them to send in their 10-second pitch about why they should be hired by McDonald's. And actually, really cool thing they did here was share back out onto their own Snapchat story some of those best entries. So they were showing the audience how, you know, all of their peers were contributing to that story, and you know, we just saw the engagement grow and blossom from there. So McDonald's actually achieved 10% of their target application rate within 24 hours of the campaign, and they got a 35% overall lift in applications, and this was the one they won 4 Cannes Awards for as well. The other nice touch for McDonald's, it gave them a bunch of earned media placements that left people sort of wondering, you know, why didn't we come up with this campaign? And again, it was because their audience were right at the center of it. They were actually a part of the storytelling, and everyone who watched this was actually better off for having seen it. It meant something to the audience. So I want to show you another quick look at this one as well.
Millennials looking for a job in Australia?
Then you may have to do a snap vacation.
Well, forget a resume and a cover letter. McDonald's now testing out a new way to apply for jobs.
Macca's is inviting people to apply for work by sending a 10-second message on Snapchat.
Snap Locations let people use a special lens that show the applicant in uniform.
I'm going to learn how to use Snapchat.
Yeah.
McDonald's is Australia's biggest employer of young people. So to find the next generation of crew, we turned Snapchat into an innovative new recruitment channel and created ads that instantly triggered a Snap Location, transforming them into one of the McDonald's crew. All they had to do was tell us why they wanted to apply.
Hi, my name's Alicia and I live in Eastern New South Wales.
I suited up for my Snapchat interview.
I am really enthusiastic.
Fast learning and all-round good guy.
And I really need a job and I love food, so hire me.
We received thousands of Snap Locations on the first day alone. News spread around the world, becoming a global talking point. And in a matter of days, we placed young Aussies in real jobs.
Meet McDonald's latest recruit, snapping up her first job through Snapchat.
I do it every day, and so it was more normal to be doing that than filling out like a resume.
Proving that it's not hard to attract young workers if you know where to find them. Snap Locations, transforming the face of recruitment in under 10 seconds.
So really fun campaign, that one. I've got my final example for you here. This one's a little bit closer to home. This is from one of our clients back home in New Zealand. This was on the eve of the Rugby World Cup final. For anyone who hasn't heard or seen rugby before, just humor me and accept that it's a sport. Eve of the Rugby World Cup final. All Blacks were just about to play the Wallabies, the Australian team. And if you haven't sort of seen it, we're pretty close geographically to each other down there, and there's, you know, a bit of a friendly rivalry going on. And our client, Air New Zealand, they were sponsoring the All Blacks, and their major competitor over in Australia, Qantas, was sponsoring the Wallabies. So it was kind of shaping up to be a pretty decent showdown. There was actually a whole Twitter campaign that went on here that turned into, you know, a bit of a friendly wager being placed between the two airlines. And what happened on the eve of the World Cup in real time was a piece of magic from here in New Zealand in telling a story with your audience, you know, that really, really mattered to them. So Air New Zealand issued a challenge out via their Snapchat. They said to their followers, go to the Qantas Instagram page and comment with the black square emoji to treat all the Australians to a sort of blackout just before the final. And this was really, it was based on three things, right? It was an insight into their New Zealand audience and their incredible passion for backing the national rugby team. It was a brand promise to supercharge New Zealand's success. And it was an understanding that in order to create social media gold, you know, you have to do it with your audience and really be willing to try something that actually might not work. So they issued the instructions to their audience. They waited. I think a few nervous moments for the social media team there, knowing that 90% of the internal stakeholders had told them they probably shouldn't be doing this. And then this came out. So their audience responded, and it struck a chord because it was, you know, something that aligned, I think, really well with their passion about helping them to create a movement, and it was about something, you know, that they believed in. It was timely, it was relevant, and it tapped into a sort of feeling in that moment. I think the ironic thing about this one was it was one of Qantas's most engaged months as well, but it was all the Air New Zealand fans. All right, so on to the last point here. So I know for a lot of you, you know, normally your marketing departments are set up to create social and brand ads, but I think the approach that I'm describing here requires a bit more of a media company mentality. That is, you know, finding stories that matter to your audience. And you might need to trust me here a little bit, but I genuinely think that all of you, you know, you are the best people to do it in the roles that you're in. You know, you're armed with real-time data about your audience. You've tried and tested content and topics in a heap of different formats. And I believe that you have the best ability to sort of sniff out the best stories that actually work with your audience. So I think full transparency, this last point could be a whole workshop in itself. I'm just conscious of time here. So more than happy to kind of chat afterwards and unpack this one a little bit. But just want to give you the really quick high level of how to start building this out so you can put this into your strategic storytelling kit as well. So to start out, we need to set up structures to sniff out the stories within your organization, creating, you know, internal story submissions portal, whether it be just through asking people directly, you know, on your team what they're working on and who they're working on it with. We need to monitor trends on social media, you know, create a Slack group if you have to, with up-to-the-minute ideas about, you know, what these trends are and just get that communication going from, you know, across your team and from your audience and via, you know, your social media channels as well. Because I think really your internal and external audience, the people you work with and the people you're talking to, you know, they're a wealth of information for you. And I think really what we need to do with each of these ideas that we surface is give them a quick litmus test against a couple of categories here. So is it topical? Is it timely and culturally relevant for this exact moment? People care about, you know, a lot of things in any given moment. Really, if we can tap into, you know, the things from the heat of the moment, you know, that's going to matter a lot more to people. As a local, can we be very targeted and specific in our approach to that audience? Is it unique? Has the story been told before? Why are you the person to tell this story differently to anyone else or for the first time? And is it human? Does the story have a distinctly human connection or experience that people can actually relate to or learn from, be inspired by or entertained as a result of seeing it? So people don't relate to brands, people relate to people. So if we can interweave some of that human magic into everything we do, you know, we're all going to be much better off. Cool. So to finish, I guess I just want to say this. I think despite being very challenging, this is one of the most exciting times for all of us in social media. Hopefully, you know, the three lessons in your toolkit now are going to help you go out and create content, you know, that doesn't interrupt anymore, but actually starts to resonate with our audience. And when I know for me personally, you know, one thing at our company, you know, that I wanted to leave you with that I think has put us in good stead is that, you know, sometimes it's actually okay to not know the answers to some of the problems that we're facing. I think if we approach all the stories that we're trying to develop and tell them with curiosity, you know, that maybe we do fail in some of these instances, but overall, if we're learning and growing, then we're going to find those successes along the way. I think we shouldn't be afraid to share our ideas or share something that's not quite finished and just ask for feedback. You know, don't be afraid to ask your audience for that feedback as well. Because I think the results are always better when they're collaborated on. So be curious, be open to the answer being different to what you thought it might have been, and you know, be on the hunt and the lookout for that message that's going to resonate with your audience, and if in doubt, ask them. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. We've got time for a couple of questions. Questions. I'll throw out one at least here to wrap up. Number of years ago, they used to say, you know, maybe 9% of people actually create content. I think with younger generation coming into that realm of content creators and the barriers to creating content dropping, I'm just curious. I mean, like the McDonald's thing, what percent of people are you finding that will do user-generated content and really start to engage that way in these stories?
Yeah, so I think 9%. For people publishing to the public, probably isn't too far off, to be honest. But in terms of, you know, the brands that we work with, they're not necessarily trying to capture content publishers themselves, but it's almost more intimate, like it's a message between the brands and the people that they're working with. So, you know, I think Snapchat's a great example. On one hand, on one side of the app, they've got, you know, the media section. On the other side, it's about messaging me and my friends. And I think what we've found is that when brands act a little bit more human, they actually get invited to the side of, you know, this is one of my friends and I'm going to send them content. And for that Snaplications campaign, I think that was exactly it. People weren't publishing that content to their stories. They were actually just sending it straight to McDonald's to share, which was incredible.